From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Sometimes, with so much tragedy and uncertainty going on in the world, it's nice to focus on a local feel-good story that showcases great spirit and effort, such is the case for today's show. Today we're going to talk with the two editors and founders of the River Road Anthology, a collection of short works by more than 150 local and state authors that grew out of a simple reading project years ago. You'll hear how the two women launched the project and took a huge collection of great local works and made a compelling book filled with poetry, short stories, and even songs. In our hyper-fast world, with AI seeming to intrude on every aspect of life, the anthology shows that good old-fashioned writing in a bound book can still find its audience. That's next on Oregon on the Record. It's nearly summer, and of course, that's the perfect time to find your next great summer read. Well, today's guests have a great recommendation, the River Road Anthology. They're the editors of this collection of local writers and even submitted a few works of their own. We talked to them now. The River Road, the Anthology editors, Joan Dobie and Erica Goss, thank you. Thank you both for coming in.
We are very happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Joan, I'm just going to go with you with the most basic question. For folks who don't know, what is the River Road Reading Program? And then subsequently, what is the River Road, the Anthology?
Oh, my. It was the River Road Reading Series, actually, we called it.
Okay.
And it existed, it started in 2014, and it continued until 2023.
Okay.
And shall I tell the whole story?
Please do.
Okay. So it all started when I got on the bus. I had recently lived I'd been here for a while.
Okay.
But anyway, I got on the bus, and there on the bus was Howard Robertson, who had been a friend long ago but hadn't seen him for years.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking, and it turned out that both he and I had a new book out.
Okay.
And we didn't have any place that we could read to push it because all the reading series that were around were booked up for the next year. It seemed that way.
Okay.
So we decided we'd make our own series.
Hmm.
So I had been teaching actually yoga at River Road Parks for a while, and they knew me, I mean, since 86.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, sure, you can use the annex, which is this lovely little house that they have right on River Road for the readings. And so it began. And we started inviting, we would invite three readers at a time. And the only rules were, well, at the time, they had to be from Lane County.
Okay.
And that was a little split between us, actually, eventually. But they had to be from Lane County. And they could be prose writers, they could be poets, they could be songwriters. Didn't matter what they did, just so it was their own real work.
Okay.
They had written whatever they were writing. Reading.
And did you find, wow, there were a lot of people that needed this venue?
Yes. We found so many. I mean, we invited three people we knew, and they invited people, and they told us, or they suggested people. And it really became popular. And writers were telling each other, you know, this is a really good venue. And we were videoing all the mm-hmm. readings as well. And so more and more really high quality writers were coming to read it for our series, and it was very popular, partly because the venue is so great. It's
mm-hmm.
just a beautiful little house, and we were getting pizza at Papa Murphy's Pizza. They have a kitchen. We had cooked it. And you know, it was just really went really well. And this went on for years, and eventually Howard and I separated out. He started holding his own series through LCC.
Okay.
And I stuck with the River Road.
Okay.
And the really only big difference between those two series was that I was inviting people from Portland and far away, and he wanted to stay with Lane County.
Okay. Erica, talk about the growth. Did it surprise you how big it's become? And also talk about how it was ripe in this community for something like this to blossom.
Are you talking about the anthology?
Yes.
The anthology or the readings?
Or the readings.
Take your pick.
Well, I came in, I have to give you a little background.
Sure.
I came in 2017, and I met Joan that year, and I started helping out with the River Road Reading Series. Mm-hmm. And so I helped out with that until we ended in 2023. Okay. And at that time, we had this kind of epiphany that wouldn't it be great if we could somehow commemorate all of the incredible work of the writers who had have been part of our series. Mm-hmm. And we decided that we would ask each writer to submit some pieces for us and create an anthology. And so it always sounds like, sure, that's easy to do, no problem. But it grew tremendously during the time that we were putting the whole thing together, you know, our plan and then soliciting work and then creating the book. That was a lot of work. Well, and it was amazing.
Yeah, talk about the work that went into it. I mean, talk about the nuts and bolts of it.
Well, Joan took on the actual contacting and soliciting work from the writers. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge job. And then what she would do is ask each writer to send a selection of work. And then she and Amanda and Diane and I would select the work that we liked and we would give it a rating.
Okay.
That's pretty common in literary magazines.
Sure.
And then we would decide based on that which pieces would go into the anthology. So that had to be done for each writer, and there are over 140 writers in
this.
Wow. So that was a lot of work.
I bet. Joan, I'm going to jump in here and say, how difficult was it to determine what goes in it and probably painfully what's left out?
No. What I did, because I did not trust my own editing ability,
okay,
is I asked Erica and Diane and Amanda each to take the submissions and rate them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then we had decided that each person could not get any more than 3 pages. Turned out 4 pages because.
Okay.
But that's what we had started out. And so what I would do is I would try and fit in, you know, according to their first numbers, 1, 2, and 3, into those number of pages. If that didn't work, or if I really liked something better, I would take advantage of my power.
Okay.
But generally, that's how it went. And the whole thing was, I mean, then after I selected what was going to be in it, I sent it to them to okay. And of course, you know, herding cats. Everyone had a different idea of what they wanted to change. And so then we would redo it several times. And some people, it was like even 5 times back and forth until what was really in it.
Okay. And then, Erica, you kind of picked it up from there, right?
I was working with Joan and Amanda and Diane during this time, but mm-hmm. Joan was really like, she was filtering most of the work that
okay.
was going through her. And then like Joan said, we were rating it and then
okay.
sending it back and then at some point agreeing that these would be the pieces.
Okay.
And that in itself took a tremendous amount of time. That probably took a year and a half, I'm guessing. It's all a blur. but at some point, we had to put this giant thing into a book form, and getting it from, you know, emails and submissions and, like Joan said, resubmissions was a lot of work. And so Joan and I worked together on putting that actual, you know, amoeba into a physical book form. And that did take a lot of time because we had issues with the font and how big it could be and was it readable? And everyone had a different opinion on that. And so, you know, we had to come to a consensus. And there were many discussions about that. But when most people pick up the books, and I brought a couple to show you,
mm-hmm.
They're usually amazed at the quality. Mm. And that was the work of that was the result of a lot of work between the four of us. But the final editing came down to Joan, myself, and we hired a copy editor. Her name's Kelly Eastland. She's also a poet and a writer in this area. And she kind of, she wasn't, another set of eyes that came mm-hmm. and tried to correct any errors that we found. We found errors that we were like, how did we miss that? You know, it's just like, that part was very tedious and very long. But I personally did not want to let anything go into the public, you know, because we were representing all of these writers mm-hmm. and their work, unless it was as perfect as we could make it. So,
yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking to two of the editors of the River Road Anthology, Joan Dobie and Erica Goss. Joan, this is a question actually for both of you, but I'll start with Joan. You're both writers as well. Talk about the work that you did and that you put together that's part of this anthology series.
My own work?
Yeah.
What was I going to put in for my allowed?
Exactly.
Well, actually, I had two poems that I really liked and I wanted to put in, and I was like one of the other poets. I couldn't decide which of those, because they were pretty long, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one very short poem I put in because my friend had asked me to make sure that it was in. Yeah. And that one was going to go in anyway.
Okay.
But as far as the long poem, and I would submit one and then no, and because one of them was a bit about dying and stuff like that.
Okay.
And the other was about romance and stuff like that. And, you know, considering which one would I rather be out there showing off with, I couldn't decide. So finally, I made a decision. I made it, and then finally, it's in there.
Okay. So. And Erica, what about you?
You wouldn't believe what a process this was, but I thought, well, I want three poems to be in this book that are representative of some of my work, and so the first one I put in was about just a little poem that got really long. It's about trees. It's you know, kind of thinking about how trees are important to our mental health. And then the next poem, and these had been written fairly recently when I put them in the book.
Okay.
Or when I submitted them to the team. And then the next poem was one that I wrote about a time in my life when I was a child and everything was sort of changing, and it was a kind of a very scary but also weirdly exciting time.
Hmm.
And then my last poem, which is called Köln Notebook, has become wildly popular and has been reprinted a whole bunch of times, but
that's exciting.
It's kind of a little notebook travel poem that I wrote the last time I was in Germany, and just kind of thinking about all the stuff that had happened there to my family. And so I think it's a pretty good representation. And I want to say that Joan and I realized when we were selecting our work that I think we got a lot more empathy for the people who had to select their work and send it to this team of people that they may or may not know very well and whose tastes, you know, had to be the ultimate filter.
Sure.
So I think it was a really good experience for us, you know, to kind of understand what our submitters were going through.
Sure, sure. Joan, for someone like myself who's never published anything, it always seems like, oh, that is such a daunting process where big publishing houses have to get involved. And what does this say about grassroots efforts to get something done at a local level? What I'm asking is, does what you did, the end result of this, does this show that a very simple grassroots idea can become a book and not have to like go through what we all imagine being submitting manuscripts to all sorts of publishing houses and getting letters of rejection and stuff, but you did it, and you did it here with local writers?
Oh, absolutely. Although it wasn't only local writers.
Okay, sure.
Mostly local.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
The ones who weren't local, it was because of COVID.
Okay.
We went online, and then we could invite people from everywhere.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, some of those are in there, too.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Mostly local. And, no, I've done a bit of publishing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Before, long ago when I was quite young, I had published a book called Before Us, which my young daughter had named, and it was a history of early Jewish settlers in northern New York in St. Lawrence County.
Okay.
And so I had done a similar thing, interviewing people and putting a book together, and mm-hmm. I was one of three people who did that.
Mm-hmm.
So I had done that kind of thing. I had done newsletters before, so it wasn't totally new to me to do it.
Okay.
This was probably the greatest, most overwhelming project I'd ever taken on, because of the size of it and the number of people, but I knew how to talk to people and ask them for stuff.
Yeah. Erica, and I'm going to ask you both this question. I'll start with you, Erica. Other than your own works, is there a favorite that you have in the anthology?
Oh, my gosh. Not really, no.
Okay.
I would have to answer that question like this. When I pick up the book and I just open it up at random, which is what I love about anthologies, is mm-hmm. that you can just open them up anywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm blown away by what I see there. Like,
okay.
I'll think, this is brand new. I don't remember like reading this before. And then it'll come back to me. Oh, yeah, this was the one you gave however, you know, what rating to.
Mm-hmm.
The writer, of course, is really important to me because I'm a writer too,
sure.
and I want to honor that person's words. But I guess I'm so surprised and so pleased and touched by the high quality of work in this anthology, and that reflects on the type of people we have living in Lane County and Oregon and beyond, how many writers there are and how good they are. And they don't get a lot of attention and publicity generally.
Yeah.
So I'm just really glad that we were able to do that.
Yeah. Too. Joan, what about you?
Well, I just thinking what I just said, actually for 20 years I taught a poetry class here in Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of each of the classes, we put together a book of poems from the people.
Mm.
So, and I have those little booklets still. And don't know quite what to do with that. But making books has been something that I know how to do.
Yeah. Erica, back to you. Do you think this anthology, is it accessible to all ages? Is somebody, whether they're 15 or 25 or 75, find something in this anthology that's going to speak to them?
Absolutely. And I would love to see it used in high school English classes around our area. I would love to see it used in our community college and at the university as an addition to a textbook.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question, Michael, because I think that it also makes a really good gift to give to somebody. It's got such a variety of styles, of subjects. There's nothing in it that I would think wouldn't be appropriate for all ages or anyone who's interested in literature or anyone who just wants to, you know, take a break from the stressful world for a few minutes and just dive into some beautiful words. You know, so yeah, I think so for everyone.
Joan, the last question is to you. How do people get it? Tell people listening how they can get the anthology.
Oh my. Here in Eugene, they can get it at Tsunami Books. Mm-hmm. They can get it at J. Michaels. I have submitted it to the Kiva, but haven't learned back whether they're going to carry it or not.
Okay.
So that's all local.
That's it.
Also, Andy, who happens to be my son, Andrew Dobie, has joined in with us and become a Emerald Literary Guild officer. And what he's doing is publicity for us. And he got us, not only do we have our physical books, but we're now connected to a group called Ingram's, which publishes, I think it's an on-demand printing.
Okay.
And I looked online, and there it was on Amazon. And I think, and also on
bookshop.org.
Bookshop.org. Okay.
Okay, and also Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all these places, you can get it. Just if you want it online, you just order. Also, the Emerald Literary Guild has a website, which is called emeraldliteraryguild.org. That's all, just all small letters.
I'll put that link on the on our web post.
Yeah.
Exactly, and you can order it there. Now, there are so many people who are in the anthology, and those people can get the books on a discount, and that, I don't know if that can be done unless they contact us at this point.
That needs to be done in person.
That's what we're working on, possibly getting the discount to be able to be online, but so far, no.
Great. Well, very exciting, very exciting.
Just one more thing, Mike.
Yes, go ahead.
We also have the books available at all of our readings and public events. If you come to, our windfall season is over, but if you come to any of our readings or any of our events, we always have books there. So we're willing to sell them out of the back of our car.
Very good, very good. The River Road Anthology, we've been talking to two of its editors, Joan Dobie and Erica Goss. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Michael. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Now let's check in with our own Rebecca Hanson-White about how a sudden appearance in Parvo has dog owners concerned in Florence. KLCC's Rebecca Hanson-White. Rebecca, always great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Always great to be here.
Yeah, we're so many dog lovers here in the station, but I wanted to talk about a story you recently did about a concerning issue, Parvo in Florence. First of all, just remind people what Parvo is.
Yeah, so it is a dog disease that is highly infectious and can be deadly. So it's one of those that can get spread from water bowls, from feces, and from going to the dog park. So it is one of those that is a little bit of a red alarm for people who, you know, are vets and work with animals.
Yeah, and what are they seeing in Florence?
Yeah, so they have had two incidents of detecting parvo. So one was an unhoused person who brought their pit bull into the Oregon Coast Humane Society, and he didn't know what was wrong with her because some of the symptoms of parvo could look like a lot of things, like lethargy, loss of appetite, and vomiting are all parvo symptoms. But there's a lot of you know, dog sicknesses that cause that. And
sure,
so they tried to treat her. She wasn't getting better, and then they tested her, and it was parvo. And so they did treat her for that, and she got better. And then there was another case elsewhere in the Florence area where it was a dog with puppies, and she ended up dying from parvo. So that they've detected those two instances in the area.
Okay. I know two doesn't sound like a lot, but I guess I'm relating back to an earlier statement you made that it is highly contagious. That's the big concern?
Yeah. So I talked to the Oregon Coast Humane Society about this, and, you know, it's one of those diseases that, let's say one of the dogs that was sick frequented a dog park. Well, potentially up to a year later, parvo could be lingering in the soil.
Oh, wow.
And so the best thing you can do, because you can't always, you know, your dog has to go out to go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. and you need to socialize. So the best thing you could do is get your dog vaccinated. And it is actually very accessible. It's a very common vaccine. And it's actually a series of shots. And so it's over the counter. You can get it at the vet. Puppies especially need it. They're quite vulnerable to parvo, as well as older, maybe vulnerable dogs. So it is very, very easy to prevent your dog from getting parvo.
Yeah, good advice. Good advice. Rebecca Hanson-White, always appreciate your coming in and talking to us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we talk about a new entry in the growing solar market, Balcony Solar, and how a nonprofit and local legislator are trying to bring it to Oregon. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.